podcast with Dan and Scott. Hottest golf podcast, whether you like it or not. First one back in the day when that's a put at the park. 7 p.m. special where they played after dark. From the birdies to the focus to the losses and the win. Welcome podcast, patron to the show. Lead the pen, get busy golfing or get busy dying. Hottest golf podcast and I swear I ain't lying. Yeah. Leave the pen.
Podcast patrons, Leave the Pin Podcast is super stoked to have Gashouse Golf as their official clothing sponsor for the podcast. Go to gashousegolf.com, find them on all forms of social media at Gashouse Golf. Gashouse makes affordable, eye-catching, one-of-a-kind polos that help you stand out from the crowd. Why spend $75, $100, or even more on polos that make you look like everybody else when you can get one at an affordable price from Gashouse Golf? Hit the ball a mile and look damn good doing it. Welcome back, podcast patrons. Another episode of Leave the Pin Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Dan. And we have, you know, quite frankly, probably one of my favorite tour pros out there. And I can officially say right now, PGA tour pro, Mr. Brent Grant. Brent, what's going on, my man?
Nothing much, Dan. Just enjoying the off season of, well, I think it's about 4 weeks long and trying not to make it go by too fast, but pretty thankful to have a short one for sure.
So there's a ton to touch upon. Last we spoke, you were a member of the Korn Ferry Tour, and then kind of a seminal moment in your life, I would assume, Sunday in Newburgh, Indiana, you dropped this, 35-foot putt, let out, you know, what I think was one of the coolest moments on the Korn Ferry Tour. Just a big, you know, fuck yeah, I'm ready to get after it. And dude, you've got fire in your eyes. It looked like you were going to snap your caddy in half. And it was one of the coolest moments of the Korn Ferry Tour season. Like, tell me about that, dude.
Yeah. So, went into the day. I think I needed a tee 11 or 11th alone or something like that to guarantee the card. The way it shook out was I went into 16 and I had 7 birdies on the day. And I think I was probably 4 or 5 under or something like that at the time, and bogeyed 16 and 17 going into 18. I thought I had to make birdie to get my card. It turned out that by making birdie, it gave me 11th alone, and it put me at like 31st in the reorder ranking. So it was like I was like 15th or something like that through finals. And then so I hit the tee shot, probably one of the more nerve-wracking tee shots, even though it was only a 2-iron into a freeway-sized fairway. And then hit a 9-iron to about 40 or 45 feet. Up the hill, goes left, and then back to the right. It went back to the right, and if anybody saw the footage, it was point in the air, and two of the largest roars I have ever let out in my life.
It must have been just years of kind of pent up emotion released out there, and I loved it because it was just raw, you know. And I mean, you know, you see guys out there, so many people out there are just so guarded. They're so buttoned up. They're afraid to be themselves. And a moment like that, I think, really endeared you to a whole entire new audience of golf fans.
Well, I'm definitely thankful for that. But it was, like you said, I mean, it was raw. It was real. It wasn't planned. You know, had I not bogeyed, it wasn't 16 and 17. It was, it was 16 and 17. Had I not bogeyed 16 and 17 and parred 18, you know, I'd have been a shot better and, you know, it would have worked out completely differently. But, you know, for it to work out that way, when it happened and where it happened, and, you know, with some of my family there, my girlfriend there, my coach there, you know, obviously Chris, my caddy, was, along for the ride as well, which was a blast. And it was kind of cool because you know, the whole weekend we were basically on coverage from minute one. So me and Gary became pretty close by the end of the week, and when I dropped that putt, it was, there was probably, you know, it was a good sized crowd, and everybody was pretty hammered by that point. And so it was a good time for me to be me. And, you know, the footage speaks for itself. It was pretty, pretty surreal, and it didn't really hit me until probably midway through my second event on the PGA Tour.
Now, just out of curiosity, I mean, you know, me being a crappy amateur golfer, maybe even a little bit, you know, of a decent amateur golfer, you know, I look at a putt like that and I'm literally just trying to get it somewhere near the hole. You know, like I'm trying to get into the range where I'm like, okay, I can have a tap and like, I'm not scared for my next, yeah, you know, my comeback putt. You know, like, honestly, is that a putt that you're trying to make, or are you as well looking for, you know, a foot radius, foot and a half radius or so?
You know, honestly, in that moment, and the moment changes everything, right? And if you talk to any pro or high level amateur work their assault, they'll tell you that, you know, the moment changes a lot. But the only thing you can't let it change is your routine. And honestly, I walked and stalked that putt for probably a minute, and the entire time, you know, I was getting chills, and I could feel my body shake, and I was just asking Jesus to be with me the entire time. And the amazing thing was when I hit that putt, and the greens were a little slower because it had rained, and the greens, you know, it basically was probably up a four and a half percent slope. So it wasn't a flat putt by any means, but like I said, when I hit that putt, I hit it solid, wrapped it right on my line, and it was, I watched it, and I could still see it now. It goes up the hill, kind of goes left, and then as it goes up and down, back down the other side of the hill, it just kind of tracks back to the right, and camera guy got a great angle of it, and you know, I pointed the finger out there, and it just, like I said, I mean, the routine stays the same. And if it happens to go in, great. But I felt I had to make it. And I asked for a little bit of help, and he was with me, and the putt happened to go in.
Do you feel like that's almost an outer body experience? You know, like when you watch that video, and I'm sure you've seen it before. Yeah. Right. When you watch that from the coverage, from the angle the cameraman got, does it feel like you?
Yeah, I don't even know, man. Honestly, it was. I know that everything that happened was as real and as authentic as it could have possibly have been, but so we were on Golf Channel for probably another week or so, and we had a couple of interviews, and of course they showed it several times throughout the week and throughout the interview. And that was when it sort of felt like, oh, that really didn't, like, did that really happen? Was that really, is this happening to me sort of thing? And you sort of get imposter syndrome when you're interviewing on the Golf Channel or, you know, for something like for you and I, we have obviously a great rapport. We've known each other for years and whatnot. And so it's a little different, but when you know for a fact that it's going to be shown to, you know, millions of people, and you just, you know, you look at pictures and videos of it, and you're just kind of like, it doesn't seem real. Because those kinds of moments to me have only ever happened to the best players in the world. And, you know, even then it's, I've only ever watched that happen when Tiger or Rory or those guys do it. And now I've got the opportunity to not only compete with these guys, but do that exact same thing. Which again would be, as real as anything.
Yeah, you talk about best players in the world. I mean, not that you weren't before, but now you've got this entire tour behind you. You've got this card. You're, you know, full-fledged member of the PGA Tour. How is that transition for you? Going from, you know, what we know is a little bit more of a grind on the Korn Ferry Tour with the travel to the fall series on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, so I think we had a week off. And it was probably the shortest week ever. You know, Sunday night, I don't even think I left the course until about 8. And then I think my girlfriend and I spent Monday in Indianapolis because we had some travel snafus and stuff like that, and had a nice dinner on Monday night and whatnot. And then we got home Tuesday, and, you know, I was set to leave, or we were set to leave on, I think, Friday or Saturday morning to go to Napa. So, I mean, there was literally no time to get anything organized. And, you know, I went through two caddies and learned a lot. And, you know, now with my buddy JP, and he and I are great, and we're looking forward to restart the year. But I mean, it just, there was no time to settle. There was no time to be like, oh, we're on the PGA Tour now. It was like, okay, you're here now, so figure it out. And, you know, like most things, and I've told probably a half dozen people this, but if my first year on the PGA Tour is a huge grind, and which, you know, I don't think any year isn't, but you know, a grind when maybe I'm not playing in the majors, maybe I'm not playing in the elevated events, but I keep my card for next year and I'm playing in the elevated events next year and so on, it's still better than being on the Korn Ferry Tour. And I think that was probably the first thing that I noticed right away, was that it's just not even close, man. I mean, when you show up, you can rely on eight or nine better things, or things being better than they would be on the Korn Ferry Tour, whether it's the food, the golf courses, travel, you know, player services or whatever. And it is the show. I mean, it literally is everything that, you know, we dream about or we talk about. There are a few things that obviously aren't the best thing in the world, but those get passed by how good, and to be honest, and how much flipping money we're playing for, which is an absolute joke.
So I've talked to other pros, and one of the things they tell me all the time, especially guys that have made the transition from Korn Ferry Tour to PGA Tour, is that the courses, not only are they a little bit more difficult, they're also in much better overall condition. Aside from the courses, what kind of behind the scene things do you notice that are, you know, kind of so much more elevated on the PGA Tour that maybe people don't think of? Like, is the food that much better? Are the rental cars that much better? Is the help with the travel that much better?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, so I'll give you an example. So we've obviously played two out of states, Mayakoba and Bermuda. And those were fine. I mean, I think if you've got the cash, both of those places can yield a pretty great experience. I don't think they're always the best experience for rookies, but it's just sort of you kind of got to spend money to make money.
Right.
But then we show up in, I think it was Sea Island, and they're like, oh yeah, your brand new X5 is your Beamer is sitting outside. Here are the keys. I'm like, okay, like twist my arm. Like it's not going to be a Mitsubishi Outlander. Holy shit. Like this is going to be amazing. And yeah. You know, and obviously Davis Love puts on a great show, and they take great care of us there at Sea Island. And it's definitely an event where everybody, especially because we've got so many guys that live in that area, but they just take great care of us. And obviously the golf course is unbelievable. But I mean, so from breakfast to lunch to even what happens after the rounds, I mean, the food is probably one of the, outside of the golf courses, is probably one of the biggest differences. I mean, breakfast is always sort of tough because there's an omelet bar and they can make whatever eggs you want, and there's bacon and there's biscuits and gravy and it's been sitting there and whatever. Like a buffet breakfast is never going to be so amazing unless, you know, you're talking about ordering off a menu. But, you know, lunches are usually really, really good. And, you know, it's not like you're going to roll up and see, you know, thin, crispy chicken tenders and maybe some fries. You're going to see roast beef or steak or really good chicken or really good fish or salad or whatever. And it is just more reliable, and you know, they're not shutting things down at 1 o'clock in the afternoon when, you know, guys are coming in at you know, around that time or whatever, and the schedules are a little bit better and whatnot. But, you know, I mean, it's not only are the purses 10 times better, but I think the golf courses, the courtesy cars, how well we're treated. It feels like a lot of the places on the Korn Ferry Tour, it feels like a burden to these folks, and it is. I mean, dealing with the tour is never easy, but they just don't see the value of the Korn Ferry Tour, I guess. And I think everybody understands that when the PGA Tour is in town, we bring in the millions, if not billions, of dollars just cash, period.
Yeah, yeah, a ton of revenue off the tour. It's funny you mentioned that. Actually, the first event was on the Korn Ferry Tour that I ever got media credentials for. My buddy's caddying out there, who's since moved on to the DP World Tour, Euro Tour, and we're making the turn, and he's like, hey, I'm going to go grab some Chick-fil-A sandwiches. Do you want one? I said, sure. Asked his player, do you want one? He says, sure. So he takes the order for the group. He runs into the little, you know, tent there. Comes out empty-handed. And I said, dude, what, like, aren't you getting food? He's like, yeah, they said they ran out like four groups ago. I said, so there's no food for you guys? He says, no, there's no food for us. So I completely understand, you know,
was that Louisiana?
No, it was the first year ever at Savannah. Before they became Club Car, like their first year that they've had it, when it was just the straight up Savannah Golf Championship. Now, since then, you know,
That event's pretty great. Actually.
Yeah, it is pretty great. And I think maybe with, you know, Club Car being that official sponsor there, maybe throwing a little bit more money or whatnot. But yeah, it was a crazy show the first year. They had, because they're in the Landings, right? That retirement community. And every volunteer was just, you know, a 70-year-old, 75, 80-year-old individual. It was like going to the Villages or something like that. It was pretty wild. Yeah,
that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, you're right. One of the things I wanted to ask you, what's the vibe like for rookies out on the PGA Tour? You know, because obviously you've got guys that have been out there for years that want to keep their card. And you know as well as I do, and most golf fans do, that once you get your card, you know, after that first year making that top 125, top 150, it's pretty easy to keep it, you know, because you get into so many events that rookies don't. Is there any, or did you notice any animosity out there, or are people pretty welcoming?
I didn't have any issue, really. I mean, there have been, you know, a couple of times where I said something to somebody or asked somebody a question, and whether I timed it poorly or they just happened to be in a bad mood, you know, they kind of give you the look of, why are you talking to me? Which each and every time that happens, I look at my caddy and tell them, if I ever treat anybody like that, they should just go ahead and hit me over the head. But
for sure.
you know, the amazing thing is, I'll give you a great example. So Johnson Wagner, this was the second event back in COVID, so 2020. He and I were playing a practice round, and, you know, we had a chat afterwards, and I was talking about missing cuts and how to get away from that. And I think you and I might have talked about it, but, you know, he put his finger in my chest and he said, get off the fucking cut line. And, you know, so fast forward 2 years later, we're both walking down the fairways kind of adjacent to one another in Bermuda, and it was on the weekend, and I sort of, hey, Johnson, I got off the cut line, and he gave me a big fist bump. And, you know, and since, you know, and James Hahn, you know, I've talked to so many guys, Jason Duffner, and some of these guys that, you know, you hope and pray that they're really as cool as they seem. And a lot of the times it's, and they're even cooler. And, you know, we were fortunate enough to get talked to by Ryan Palmer and Kevin Streelman. They flew up, they weren't playing in Napa, and I think Streels was, but Palmer wasn't, and they flew up and they talked to us at the rookie meeting. And, you know, I have not had a single instance where I've like regretted, aside from like the couple I mentioned, where it's like, oh, like I really feel bad for being a rookie. It's kind of like, no, I earned my way here, and everybody knows my story, and everybody knows how I got out here. So at least for me, I haven't had any animosity or issues with being a rookie. I'd say that there's a pretty clear divide between the three, you know, between the rookies, between those that are maybe not veterans, but they're definitely not rookies, and then the guys that are, you know, at the top. You know, there's a pretty clear distinction, just how things are and how they're treated and what events they get to play in and whatnot. But, you know, the whole idea is that you pay your dues and, you know, then you don't have to worry about it ever again. So
for sure. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like any job, right?
Yeah. Put in your time.
That's it. So you mentioned kind of like that rookie meeting. I didn't know that. Is that like the NBA or the NFL rookie symposium where they kind of sit you down, explain how the tour works? What's that all about?
Yeah, I mean, it's not. It's definitely not any big, huge secret or classified by any means. But I would say that it's a 2 or 3 day excursion where there's a lot of wine, there's a lot of good food, but there's also a lot of sitting and sort of chatting or getting chatted to from different tour representatives about each little niche or little piece of the tour that maybe we didn't know already. I personally believe that there's a lot that could be streamlined, and they're kind of using it for, you know, basically to say, hey, you know, let's celebrate this accomplishment. And I think that that's a really good thing. At the same time, I kind of don't, there's so much that we have to do when it comes to golf. You know, the majority of what we talked about, I suppose, could have been in an email, but
so basically, or, like, yeah, any job.
Yeah. So, but no, I think, you know, they put us up at the Meritage and they took care of us for two days and three nights, and it was a fantastic experience, and I'm super thankful for it. But it doesn't leave me with this overwhelming desire to do a bunch of that stuff, if that makes sense.
Like, for sure.
I've never been one to, you know, be like, oh, you know, come to this party or that party or this event or that event. It's like, oh, I'm here to work, and, you know, and I'm here to put my head down and go to work. And I think that some people can take that the wrong way, and others kind of understand. But I think it was a fucking blast. I got very hammered one of the nights and probably drank too much to begin with. But I don't have to ever do it again. So
yeah,
it's kind of cool.
So that was all 25 of you that came from the Korn Ferry Tour up?
So every rookie that came from the 50 cards.
Oh, okay. Right, okay.
The first 25 and the second 25. So every rookie that came from the combined bit there. Obviously, there were guys that got their card back. There were a bunch of rookies that you know, got their card for the first time. Some older guys, some younger guys, and some in between. And then, you know, everybody else that got their card through the playoffs or otherwise, you know, was able to chill out that week.
Cool. Makes sense. So your PGA Tour, you know, career, what do we got? We got, 7 events. Is that right? 7, 8 events or something?
Total this year, I played 9. In my lifetime, I've played Let's see, that was my third Sony. So,
oh yeah, it is.
So, yeah, I've played 11. I've played 11 total. But yeah, this season I played 11 PGA Tour events, and I think 20 something Korn Ferry Tour events. So it was a long year.
Very busy year. Yeah, long, long grind. So your last four events, you made two cuts out of those, right? The RSM, awesome. The Butterfield, Bermuda. I know that you're a dude from talking with you for these last few years that is, you go into a tournament and you think hands down, like, I can destroy this course. I can win this thing. So with those two cuts being, under the umbrella of having your PGA Tour card, is that something you're satisfied with? Are you happy with those, or are you? And I see you kind of shaking your head there. And I think I already know the answer. I got to ask it anyway. Let me rephrase it this way then. I don't want to say it's disappointing, because obviously, dude, you made the PGA Tour. That's the ultimate goal, right? But were you disappointed in those two? And if you were, how disappointed in only making those two cuts, let's say?
Well, obviously, to start the PGA Tour season, narrowly missing that cut and being, as I said, drinking too much, in the weekend prior, and I think I slept wrong and I had a bum shoulder that week, and there was a bunch of different things that were going on top of being a rookie that I was dealing with. But that was disappointing, because I know that golf course up there in Napa, and it's a golf course that suits me very, very well. The next week I changed caddies, and basically I had one of the worst rounds I've played all year, and then probably one of the better rounds that I've played as well. So it was kind of a weird one there. Vegas was just a terrible attitude. I think I knew that the guy I had in the bag, who was a great guy, but I learned a lot from him, but the vibe wasn't there.
Okay.
And I think I missed the cut by one or two.
Yeah, that was 200 total, 140 for the 2 days there at Shriners.
Yeah, so I hit 5 iron from like 240 to like 2 feet on my last hole on Friday to make eagle, and I think I missed it by one or two. That was hilarious. And then I made the cut in Butterfield.
Yep.
And I think I was like top 10 or top 15 in putting. I had like top 3 in birdies. And essentially all it came down to was a couple of decisions and a couple of holes that, maybe I was moving a little too quick on that prevented me from top 10-ing. And then the very next week, Mayakoba, my irons, I found out in Houston the week after Mayakoba that my irons were bent, I think from just travel. Bent a degree to standard when they're supposed to be flat. So I was missing everything left and didn't know why. And then I found out my 3-wood had a flat spot in it. And that golf course handicaps you, especially people like me. You have to hit 3-wood and 2-iron. And I just fucking couldn't find the fairway. So
it takes driver out of your hand then.
Yeah. So it took driver out of my hand. Even on the par 5 7th, I'll give you an example, full swing driver hits me into that cave bunker, and
right,
I couldn't hit 3-wood far enough or straight enough to be able to go 3-wood, even though if my 3-wood had not been, had a flat spot in it and it was good and I could rely on it, I probably would have made the cut. But that's neither here nor there. We could go the coulda, woulda, shoulda game all day long. But
well, let me interrupt real quick, because those are two like super interesting points that you made. Irons bent due to travel. I think people don't realize, you're traveling with your clubs just like I would travel if I went out to Bandon or something like that. There's no special PGA Tour plane that's flying all the clubs everywhere. And you mentioned the flat spot and the 3-wood. So I'm going to assume that club testing on site showed you that, or did you have to go off on your own to get that checked?
So the week before Mexico, we had an off week. I had an off week because I think they were playing the CJ Cup. And I had obviously taken a little bit of time off, but you know, my swing was fine. I was dialed in and I was working with my trainer and I couldn't seem to hit three wood, you know, keep it from spinning all over the place and just not being consistent. So I looked at it, I put a card over it and I just felt like something was off. But obviously my eye is not as trained as some of my club guys over at Srixon are, you know, and then, so I went to Mexico and so this was already too late. I couldn't get another three wood. And when you're international, you're not getting any clubs or balls or anything like that. So I was kind of SOL for about 10 days. And then when I went to Houston on Monday, I gave the guy my three wood. He goes, "Yep, there's a flat spot right here." Huh. I go, "Awesome." So I got two new three woods built, almost identical. One's my gamer and the other one's backup. And then I also found out that my irons were bent, too far upright. So it literally, I mean, it happens. You know, it's part of the game. It's part of travel. It's part of being on tour. And then, you know, my coach was in Houston and that was probably the most disappointing one because I was hitting it really, really well. My short game was unbelievable. I had a great field for the greens. And I played really, really well on the first day. I think I was top 10, top 10 or top 20 or whatever it was after the first day. I went to sleep, I think, one or two shots off the lead, and I woke up and I was 10 shots off the lead. Tony Finau obviously played unbelievable golf.
Right, unbelievable, right.
But he played his golf.
Yeah.
And then I had to play my second nine for my second round, starting out on at 6:30 or 7:30 in borderline freezing wind. When the guys in the other side of the wave were able to play two rounds in above 75 degrees with almost no wind. So if you look at the leaderboard, and if you were able to look at the leaderboard after Friday or Saturday, you would see that almost nobody from the backside of my wave made the cut, and almost everybody from at the other side of the wave did. So it happens. The weather changes things, and it's supposed to even out over the course of a year or over the course of a career. But
right, sometimes it doesn't though.
That one sucked. And then I got to Georgia, and my back was sore and tired, and somehow I made the cut even with an absolute horrid attitude. But I made the cut and played okay on Sunday, and I don't even know how I pulled that off, honestly. But it happened, and my girlfriend and I went to Mexico after the week after that for her 30th birthday, and got back, and I think I almost died somehow. I'm alive, but I was like sick or something, and then now I'm working hard this week, and fuck, I leave in, what's today, the 7th? I leave in a month for Hawaii. So
now with this off season, I'm assuming you have your schedule planned. Are you one of the guys, like, are you going to play every single week that you get in?
So, I'll play, so I think I'm guaranteed as of now, I'm guaranteed the Sony, American Express, Torrey Pines, and AT&T.
Okay. So all the way up through, early February.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not guaranteed Waste Management, and I'd have to win, I think, in order to get into RIV.
And that's because Waste Management and RIV are now the elevated events, correct?
Correct. So everybody's going to play in Waste Management. So it'll be a huge surprise if anybody from the Korn Ferry Tour category gets in. And then Riv is an invitational. So, and it's right. only 120 man field. So, those two are a stretch. And then Arnold Palmer, I can get in by playing really, really good golf. I think I got to be top 70. But then we've got the Puerto Rico, I think, that is opposite the Arnold Palmer.
Correct.
So,
yep.
Yeah. And then I think we've got Dominican. That's the one after that. That's opposite Valspar, I think. Doesn't really matter. Anyway. So it's there's several events that you know, I'm gonna get into that I'm definitely gonna play. I think my big thing is playing as much as I can, but if I play really, really well and kind of earn myself the off weeks like I did last year on the Corn Ferry Tour, winning takes care of a lot. So my schedule will become significantly shorter when we play really, really well. So.
Right, right. Now, are there any – now, let me ask you this. Do they give you – the PGA Tour, I mean, do they give you, like, almost a cheat sheet or so for each course? Like I'm thinking, do they have a digital document at all that, you know, says, okay, like, here's lodging for this course. You're going to get – this car, et cetera, et cetera. You're going to, you know, lodging is through here. Use this flight, stuff like that. Or is the travel aspect still kind of on your own a bit? Because that's one of the craziest things about tour life. You know, you're a professional athlete for a team sport in a league, and that team takes care of everything. You know, you're Team Grant. So you take care of everything on that aspect.
Yeah, I mean, so I've got, a pretty amazing travel agent, Michelle. She's great. She knows where the good hotels are, where the bad ones are. If they happen to fall in the list of hotels that the tour gives us, that the tour happen to get a discount from, that's great. If not, then it's no big deal. But and then generally, there's a courtesy car, so. You know, they'll say, hey, pick up your, you know, email or text so-and-so, your flight info, and, you know, they'll make sure you have a car when you need one, whether it's on Sunday or Monday or whatever. And so, that's about it, though. I mean, the schedule is usually laid out the week before. We know when we can go, where we can go. They give... I think the player services gives a list of restaurants that we can go and whatnot and or recommended. But other than that, I mean, it's not really, you know, flights are always on our own and we're booking everything. I can tell you that aside from the courtesy car, so all the expenses are on us.
Any tournament or course that you're truly looking forward to playing?
Well, aside from the Sony, that's obviously going
right. That's a home. That's a homecoming there.
Yeah. So it's literally. So I found out, or not found out, but I knew that I was the third player from Hawaii to ever get their PGA Tour card, and the last person to do it was Parker McLaughlin, and that was quite a long time ago. So. Not quite a long time ago, it was a while ago, but he and Dean Wilson both won, which is something I haven't done yet. But, showing up and this being the first time I don't have to qualify or get an exemption means I can show up when I want to show up, where I want to show up. And there's no sense of oohing and aahing. It's, I'm here, this is my show. We're here to get this done. And so there's no like, oh, if you play well in the Sony, maybe you can get into the American Express. No, we're in the Sony, we're in the American Express, we're in Torrey because we have a PGA Tour card. And so there's none of this like exempt player or Monday qualifying Tour Pro sense anymore. It's we've earned this. And when I step on the tee on Thursday, whether it's Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon at Wailea, it's going to be a special one, and I'm going to put on a show.
you feel like having that tour card and knowing the tournaments that you are getting into and have already, you know, quote unquote qualified for, does that take a little pressure off of you on the season, knowing that, hey, you know, I've got these, you know, in the bag? Or are you the type of guy that has that self-imposed pressure?
Yeah, Dan, I mean, honestly, you know me pretty well, but it's difficult to ever say that there isn't any pressure or expectation or desire to really keep the pedal down. I think that my biggest downfall or mistake last year after I won in Nashville was sort of thinking that it was in the bag.
Okay.
And there was a lot of talk about Napa and a lot of talk about the schedule in general, and nothing was locked up. You know, that's another thing that obviously going through that peak and then having it be pretty deep valley, and then having it all culminate in Indiana, I think that's probably another thing that drove that reaction. But, you know, I've tried to perform as best I possibly can every single time. And I think that this year on the PGA Tour, like I said, the idea is to be inside the top 70. And I know for a fact that I have to play really, really good golf to be there. But at the same time, it's not out of the realm of my ability by any stretch of the imagination that not only can I be in the top 70, but we can be pretty high up there. So, and in order to do that, we have to keep the pedal down. So it never stops ever until you're Tiger Woods. And
right,
you know, it that's something I really kind of try to impart on people, specifically, you know, younger players, that they have to understand it never ever stops. When you become a rookie on the Korn Ferry Tour, or even if you are some of the lucky guys that you know get to go straight out to the PGA Tour, you know, until you win over and over and over and over again for about 10 years, it's never over. It's literally like it's kind of almost a impossible climb to look at, because you just don't quite realize what it means to be able to plug and play and be able to show up to an event when and where, however you want to show up, like Tiger, like Rory, like, you know, Dustin, all those other guys can or could, you know, before LIV Tour.
Yeah, I will get to that in a second, but I think it's funny you mentioned Tiger, because Tiger's the type of guy that even though he could rest on his laurels, he never did and was always pushing the pedal, which is in turn the reason why he won so many times. You know, it just becomes cyclical. So you mentioned DJ not being able to play and stuff like that in the LIV Tour. What are your thoughts on that? The whole LIV Tour in and of itself. I'll leave it as a big open-ended question like that. What are your thoughts?
Oh, come on, Dan. You're better than that. There are several guys that I've watched for many years that I wish they could be out competing on the PGA Tour. There are a few guys that decided to go to the LIV Tour that felt that it was the best decision for them. And that's why they went. It wasn't out of spite, or they didn't talk a bunch of shit or anything like that. It was just, hey, you know what? This is money that my family and I can use for generations, and I don't want to play that much golf to begin with. And quite honestly, I'm okay with it. And you know what? That's great. I don't blame a single person for going. I've obviously been asked umpteen times by different people if I would go, how much it would take, and so on and so forth. And, you know, the guys over there, there are a few of my, there's at least one of my really good friends that is involved over there, and he has a blast, and I wish them all the best. But there's not a way you could convince me that being on the PGA Tour isn't, I shouldn't say there's not a way you could convince me. As of now, I can't see a reason why being on the PGA Tour doesn't benefit somebody whose goals are to be one of the best players in the world. Generational money is something that can be earned, and every single one of those guys that got the money from LIV earned it in one way or another, and or are earning it as we speak, with what they do on the golf courses out there. But as far as Dustin and the specific guys go, it sucks because I personally just wanted to compete against them, and I felt that, or I still feel that, they have things that they can offer the golf world, and it's unfortunate that the things that are preventing them from being on the PGA Tour are pretty cut and dry, but it's kind of like a weird balancing act that you have to do, because the rules, while they are pretty clear, with regards to the releases and the suspensions, if you don't get a release, it doesn't make any sense that you know, we're quote unquote independent contractors, and yet, you know, we can't go and play on another tour.
Because right. That's tour, it's funny you mentioned. Yeah. Yep. It's funny you mentioned that, because
our image or whatnot, and or something or other. And I really haven't gotten into the details or care to, but it's, it sucks, but it is.
Yeah.
They made me a bunch more money for sure.
Yeah. I'm not too deep into the weeds on that, but you know, historically the PGA Tour has always said, you know, they're independent contractors, and that's why they were able to play on the Euro Tour if they wanted the Australasian Tour or whatever. So, I mean, that's a little murky, but, you know,
it's very murky.
yeah. That's a nice media way of putting it. Have you been asked at all to join?
No.
Okay.
No.
So no one's ever approached you?
No,
I
think my background as it stands, is probably,
I would think might be a little bit off-putting to the people that own that tour.
I'd assume so, but again, you know how assumptions go.
Of course.
But there are plenty of reasons why I wouldn't go outside of who I am as a person and how I was brought up. Certainly the rest of my family. But, you know, and a lot of those kind of center around the idea that, you know what, if it is a choice, if you're saying basically A, play on the PGA Tour or play on the LIV Tour, then I'm going to play on the PGA Tour, because you can't tell me that winning a LIV Tour event is somehow prestigious in any way, shape, or form.
Because right.
If I wanted to go play against Dustin Johnson and Brooks and Gooch and a couple other guys, I'd just make a couple phone calls and tell them to meet me down in South Carolina or wherever the fuck they wanted to play, and we could go play.
Right.
We could go play for 3 days, and we put up a bunch of money, and we play for it. And that's essentially, in my opinion, what I've seen from the coverage, from who's won every flipping event. And, you know, and it's fun, and it's a blast for those guys. And a lot of those guys has worked their tails off to get there, and I'm so happy for them. But again, if it's a choice between playing in Jack's event or Arnie's event or Tiger's event and a LIV Tour event, I'm sorry. You're just not. You can't convince me that it's not going to be worth any more than those events. That's for sure.
Let alone
be even the same level. Maybe in 10, 15 years. But by that time, I'm well past my prime. So.
And just to kind of clarify for maybe some new listeners or those that don't know Grant, he comes from a very military family. So there's a ton of pride in the U.S. military there. So maybe that clarifies some of you know, the comments and background that he's talking about. So let's get to this offseason real quick. I'll get you out of here, you know, on this. What have you been up to this offseason? Are you grinding on the range? Are you, you know, just taking it easy, relaxing? Are you, is it a mix between the two? Like, what's a day in the life look like now in one of these off weeks?
Well, so, I mean, obviously, you know, we got out of the RSM, and that was, I think, my 30th or 30-plus event of the year. Certainly, it feels like more than 30. And it was a long year, it was a long couple, 3 years, you know, from 2019 all the way to now. And the body was tired, the wrist wasn't feeling great. So I took my girlfriend to Mexico and for her birthday, and we had a blast there and didn't touch a club. And then I was sick when I came back, so I didn't touch a club there. So since Sunday, of RSM, which was the week before Thanksgiving, I didn't touch a club for almost 2 weeks. So Monday of this week, I think Monday or Tuesday, was the first time that I had even swung a club. So this week we are working really, really hard in the gym, trying to get the body to match the swing, rather than, you know, trying to swing a certain way to do something with the golf ball. It's let's make sure the body can operate as easy as possible for the swing that we need to make. So we're doing that a lot, and then hitting a few balls out at TPC, and then shooting some guns and trying to get some relaxation in at the same time. So it's kind of a juggle. Next week we're going to. Or this week, excuse me, later this week, we're going to be in California, and then we're going to be in the Palm Desert next week, getting prepped for the American Express before Christmas time. So work is going to ramp up right after Christmas, and then right before Sony, and then that's going to be about a 2 week thing, and then we're off and rolling, and probably we'll talk to you in about a year.
Yeah. And at that point in time, hopefully there's, a win or two under your belt, maybe, a Masters appearance or something along those lines. And we're rolling forward, you know?
Yeah, buddy. That's the idea.
Awesome. Well, Brent, you know, again, man, I can't thank you enough. You know, I truly appreciate the rapport and the relationship over these last few years. I know this is always one of our most popular episodes. People love hearing the candor. People love your honesty out there, and they love following along, and now they're going to follow you on the PGA Tour, man.
Yeah, man. I like I said, it's been a fun ride thus far, and I hope to first of all, I hope to actually meet you in person, which would be sick. But also, I'm really thankful for these conversations. They bring to light a few things for me that I think about, especially when it comes to just, you know, obviously when we talk about junior golf and stuff like that, but yeah, man, it's a blast. I really appreciate it. And to all the listeners out there, let's make it a fucking great year.
Hell yeah. I love it. I love it. All right, people. So either get busy golfing or get busy dying. Hey, podcast patrons, it's Dan. Sorry to interrupt this episode, but just wanted to make you aware that we are now being sponsored by Canmore Sports. You've seen it in our Instagram stories, you've seen it in our posts and our reels, and you've heard it right here on Leave the Pin Podcast. Canmore Sports does golf GPS to perfection, whether it be the watches, the handheld devices, anything you need, they've got. Know your exact distances, increase your greens and regulations, decrease your putts, and look like a damn better golfer out there doing it. Go to our Instagram page at Leave the Pin and check out the link to save 15% off all Canmore Sports products. While you're at it, leave us a rating and a comment on iTunes. Help us grow so we can serve you, the people. Now back to our episode.